Welcome to the Secular Web Radio Show. I'm your host, T.J. Walker. Thanks for joining us today. Our special guest is Dr. Robert Price. He is the author of Beyond Born Again, Towards Evangelical Maturity. Dr. Price, thanks for being with us. What is evangelical maturity?
Well, in this original edition of the book, I argued that most of what we call born-again Christianity, fundamentalism, and evangelicalism is beset with insurmountable problems theologically, biblically, and even experientially. However, if one wanted to, by hook or by crook, to remain in the evangelical community, there would be ways to tighten the thing up and purify it of a lot of its intellectual dishonesty and even fanaticism. I have recently revised the book a bit and eliminating some material, adding others, to reflect a straight appeal for people just to leave the evangelical camp. So I've kind of changed the approach between the two books. I still believe one can be a thinking evangelical Christian, but it seems rather arbitrary to me, and I've sort of taken the better approach of saying that maturity would be just to leave the camp altogether.
You don't consider yourself an evangelical Christian. What made you leave?
Well, there were a couple of things. I suppose the major one was that the more I studied the Bible, including studying at an evangelical seminary, and read the apologists for gospel reliability, for the resurrection of Jesus, etc., the less sense I thought it made. And this is quite important to me because I did quite a lot of witnessing, interpersonal sharing of the faith, and inevitably questions would come up. How do we know there was a Jesus? How do we know what he did and said, and how do we know any of it's more than legend? And I thought I had good answers to that, but the more I read to defend my faith, the less defensible I found it to be. Likewise with the Bible, the very notion of an infallible scripture that had no errors in it, that had no contradictions, the more I studied it, I just found that conception of the Bible to be a straitjacket in terms of understanding it. The Bible makes much more sense to me as I now study it, more so than ever, without the constraints of dogma. And you can't really remain in the evangelical camp without a particular view of biblical authority, which I just don't share. The other major thing that led me out of it more or less concurrently was that I just felt that the pietistic way of interpreting experience promoted by born-again Christianity, give your problems to Jesus, let him take care of them, don't try to do anything in the strength of the flesh, seeing God behind every corner and seeing life as just a kind of testing ground with God as the kind of B.F. Skinner and you as the rat in the box, it just began to pall on me, and it seemed that it was a kind of superstitious approach to life that only protracted immaturity. This got me out of evangelicalism, but I remained within liberal Protestantism for some years afterward, and eventually felt that the only difference between liberal and conservative Protestantism was that the former tried to humanize things, and I figured, well, why not go all the way just to flat-out humanism?
Was there an historical Jesus?
Nobody can know, in my opinion. There can be made a good case for there having been one, but it's an embarrassment of riches. Too many plausible and very different sketches of Jesus can be drawn from the ambiguous evidence. But on the other hand, this Jesus story and its outlines is so much the same as the mythic hero archetype one finds in world mythology that it's certainly not unlikely that there never was a historical Jesus.
Well, Jesus 2000, that was the cover story on Time magazine recently. His myth and marketing prowess seem to be growing every year. First of all, let's look at that number 2000. What's your whole concept and perception of our dating system and our very calendar with the BC and the AD revolving around Christ?
Well, it it's apparently a bit inaccurate. Even if you take the New Testament accounts at face value, Jesus would have been born in something like between 4 and 6 B.C. or B.C.E., as some say, before the Common Era, because Luke and Matthew both place the birth of Jesus before the death of Herod the Great, which occurred in 4 B.C.E. And it seems to me that the whole millennial thing is really an arbitrary counter. It is based on an old view that I think we find in the Epistle of Barnabas, not part of the New Testament, where someone proposes the millennial week theory, that if you think the world was created more or less in 4000 BCE, like Bishop Usher thought, based on all the biblical chronologies, then you've got 2,000 years more added since the appearance of Jesus, and that would mean that the millennial Sabbath, the 7,000-year period, is about to begin, and that must be marked by the coming of Jesus. It's a kind of a poetic structure if you're into that kind of thing, but it just seems like even if you believe in a supernatural second coming of Jesus, you're kind of winging it on a thing like that.
Our special guest is Dr. Robert Price. He's a member of the Jesus Seminar, and he's the author of Beyond Born Again, Towards Evangelical Maturity. You can find out more information about that book right here at the Secular Web, so please check that out. Dr. Price, what is the Jesus Seminar?
It's an independent group of scholars that began about a dozen years ago. It's got a constantly shifting membership, and to be a member, one only need to have appropriate graduate degrees in New Testament or related fields. There's no litmus test other than that. And when I say independent, I mean that the scholars, though teaching in various institutions, are not sponsored by any for the sake of this operation, and the Jesus Seminar is not part of any other group. And it exists to try to bring to public awareness the kind of critical scholarship that New Testament professional scholars have been familiar with for many, many decades, but which remains a mystery to the people in the pew.
And you mentioned the New Testament. What do we know about Jesus outside of the New Testament?
Very little. There's a debated handful of passages in the Talmud, early Jewish writings, in Josephus, a first century Jewish historian, and in Cornelius Tacitus, early second century Roman historian, and possibly in Pliny the Younger and Suetonius. But the genuineness of all these passages has been called into question, and with good reason. I think the Pliny reference is spurious, a Christian interpolation. Most scholars think the Josephus reference is, Suetonius is ambiguous. It's not even clear he's referring to Jesus as a historical figure. And Tacitus does refer to Jesus, but it's certainly second, third, fourth, or fifth-hand information, merely reflecting that Christians preached their belief in Jesus. He's not any kind of independent channel of information. And the Talmudic material is notoriously legendary, but if it proves anything, it tends to prove too much, since there's a reference in there to Jesus having lived 100 BCE. If that's to be relied on, the Gospels are really completely off. So it's all ambiguous snippets and scraps that really don't tell us much. Though I would admit that doesn't matter much, given what Jesus is shown being in the Gospels, a kind of faith healer and teacher, because they were a dime a dozen in those days, and one wouldn't expect that Jesus' exploits to appear in the newspapers had there been any.
Now, you're an expert on the Gospel of Thomas. Why wasn't that included in the New Testament?
I think guilt by association, because this was true with some other New Testament books too. There was a kind of fiction involved that all books written by apostles would be in there, but the ones that bear apostolic names that are in there, at least among the 12 disciples, the authorship is fictitious or the books are actually anonymous, as with the four Gospels, the names of Matthew, Mark, and Luke being later editorial conventions. But the Gospel of Thomas and others with apostolic names were omitted because their contents were thought to be heretical compared with the emerging orthodoxy of the second and third century.
Can you give us an example of one of the heresies?
Well, it seems to teach the preexistence of souls. For instance, in one passage, the disciples come to Jesus and they say, "Tell us what our end will be," kind of like in Mark 13 where they ask him about the end of the age, where Jesus says, "Oh, have you reached stood at the beginning so that you ask concerning the end? Go back to the beginning and then you'll see the end." And that seems to hint at preexistence. And other passages that definitely say it. It says, "When they ask of you, where are you from? Say, we're sons of the living Father, and we came from the light," etc., etc. And it seems to have the tinge of early Gnostic Christianity. One is saved by knowledge of the divine mysteries rather than faith in a preached party line. But really, you can find the same sort of thing in the Gospel of John and in Second Peter. And it seems to me that by the time they were trying to decide what should be part of a Christian scripture in the second and third centuries, the problem that Thomas was mainly used by Gnostics and Manichaeans who were on various grounds considered heretics.
Jesus at 3,000, what are your predictions? His stock has gone up consistently for a long time now in terms of popular appeal. Many agnostics, secular humanists, atheists have been predicting for hundreds of centuries that once the masses get taught science, evolution, physics, the belief in a religion of the supernatural will just fade away. It hasn't happened. In fact, even among highly trained professional scientists in the United States, huge percentiles believe in organized religion and specifically Christianity.
Well, the big reason for that, though I want to admit that it's not a cut and dried, open and shut thing that any intelligent person would not believe in God or the supernatural, it does seem to me that unless one wants to believe in these things, there is not sufficient reason to believe in it. But I'm certainly not going to say that somebody like Mortimer Adler or William F. Buckley is a fool or an idiot. That would make me a fool, thinking people differ on these things. But even if one accepts, as I do, that the evidence certainly leans toward a belief in a naturalistic cosmos without any